Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you, big book study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, May 29th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the big book, and we are on page 64, starting with the first paragraph, "Therefore we started upon," reading through three paragraphs, ending with "We were burned up," and on the top of page 65, and the comments will be on all three paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Eleanor F., the 12 Traditions, Leslie M., and readers of the text are Terry A. H., Stephanie L., and John K. The share ID for Monday, May 28th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,469. That's 11469. And for Tuesday, today, May 29th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,471. That's 11471. And our newcomer greeter is our beloved Melanie C. Thank you. All right. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Eleanor F. to read the 12 steps. Thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you, Mo. Good morning, everybody. This is Eleanor F., recovering compulsive overeater in Tennessee. Thank you so much for being here and for letting me do service. These are the 12 steps of I'm just blundering. These are our 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible. To do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I pass.
Thank you, Eleanor F., and I will now ask Leslie M. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York, and thank you for your service, Mo. Here are the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, our group purpose For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. OAs Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. OAs Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Leslie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 64, starting with, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. We'll be reading through 3 paragraphs, ending with, we were burned up, and that's on the top of page 65, and the comments will be on all 3 paragraphs. And I will now ask Terry A.H. to begin our reading. Terry, thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Terry A.H. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about the values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused us failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all form of spiritual disease. We have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambition, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. And I'm going to set my timer. A lot to cover in these 3 paragraphs. I'm just going to kind of focus on basically the first paragraph and kind of maybe tie in some of the rest of it. And So why do I write inventory? So this is the first place that I take action. And, you know, it says resentment is the number one offender. And why is it the number one offender? It's because if I'm not taking a regular inventory before I start this action and I don't take inventory, every resentment, there's a relapse behind every resentment. So this first paragraph, it says, if the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about the value. So I learned to write inventory to face and be rid of the things myself, which has been blocking me off from this power. And I write a four-step inventory, not to find out who I am, but to really become clear on who I'm not. And so when I take this inventory, I'm searching around for just the facts. And so I like to do the visual. I've done the refrigerator visual before, and I also have another visual that I like to share. And it's like, if I have all these ways of showing up in a relationship and showing up for life, and it's really not working for me anymore. And it's the same way that the comparison to a store. So I have the store, and it's full of some of the aisles have really good stuff in it and people really like it. And I say, you know, I'm going to spend more time in this aisle by checking out all this good stuff. And but at the back of the store, there's all this broken crap. And I look at it and I say to myself, this is good too. And, you know, because I think there's some good stuff that can be still, sold. And so I have all this broken stuff from the past that I keep in my store, and I'm trying to sell this stuff by, and most people are going to say, are going to agree that the store is pretty well plenished and has good stuff in it. But because I keep trying to get you to buy this broken stuff, it's not going to work. So I see, you know, like I present myself one way, I have great intentions and, you know, pretty good traits, and I'm a good person, but at the other end, I have all these needs and wants that I have to get met by other people, and how it shows up in my life. If I don't get clear picture of it until I take inventory, and I get, you know, and what hasn't worked for me, and what's been separating me from other people and from God, so I look at the inventory, I get to name it, claim it, and dump it. And what I've learned, the inventory becomes more of a relief because the pain of not doing it becomes less a pain. The pain of doing it becomes less pain of not doing it. So I have to ask myself, what's the worth of hanging on to resentments? Does it allow me to be right? Does it allow me to keep playing victim? You know, do I get to be full of self-pity and entitlement? And I have to ask myself, is it worth it? So thanks for letting me share, and with that, I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Terry A.H. Okay, I will now open the lines up for those of you who would like to share on these three paragraphs.
Wendy M.
Rebecca T.
John K.
Liz T.
Any more? A couple more?
Marilyn T.
Melanie C.
One more? Okay, we'll go with this group. Wendy M., Rebecca, I think it was T, sorry, Rebecca, John K., Liz T., Marilyn T., and Melanie C. And then we'll have another time for those of you who want to share later. Okay, Wendy M., followed by Rebecca T.
Yes, good morning, Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado, and I thank God for the entire abstinence I have this morning, and to be on this line with you is a miracle, and I ask for, my dog's going nuts. All right, so let's start with the word resentment. It says that it kills us, number one offender, right? So before program, I didn't even know that the word actually existed. And what I know about resentment is that we re-feel again and again and again, right? So I need to, and not only, you know, do I spend all my days thinking about how I can refeel how I've been hurt and harmed over and over again, but that it's my favorite thing to tell people, right? So I spent most of my time telling anyone who would listen how I've been harmed, right? So I binged on resentments. I say that binging on resentment is like binging on potato chips. It's delicious. It tastes so good. And I just get to do it over and over and over again. All it did was reinforce the way I thought and the way I acted, right? It justified my entire existence, because don't you know? And it was actually my hobby. I consider resentments my hobby, telling you how I've been harmed. And hating people only kept me in bondage, of course. So I just want to start with that. And obviously, rehearsing resentments, I don't have to take a single responsibility for my life. I don't have to look at my part. I didn't even know what you meant by my part. And I sought relief through the resentments, of course. So I just want to start with that. And also just how everything burned me up, you know. And today, when something burns me up, I can stop and pause and look at my part. I can do a quick fourth step in my head: selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fear, you know. And today I understand what those things mean. And today I have a program that helps me out of this bondage of self, you know. And before I got relief through resentments, now I get relief through the fourth step, right, and taking a tenth every day. That brings me relief. It gives me freedom, because now I can look at my part, and thank God for that. And I also want to say, just, I really recommend that when you do the fourth step, you don't have to do it right. You just have to do it. The only way to do it wrong is just to not do it. And I don't recommend delaying, and I don't recommend spending a long time on it. You know, I tell my sponsees, and I've had this, if they delay, they do tend to go out. They do tend to eat. And the other thing, too, is this is not about beating ourselves up. I think that's really important. Doing a fourth step is just a fact-finding, fact-facing, no more than 19 words, right? We want it to be short and to the point, and begin to see our patterns, begin to see how I walk through life is how I walk through life with every resentment. But it's not about beating ourselves up. It's not about telling our sponsors, well, I shouldn't have done it that way. It's just the information, you know? So I just really recommend, do not stop. Do not delay. Just do it, and you can't do it wrong. If you do it at all, you're doing it right. And with that, I think I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy M. Rebecca T., you're up, followed by John K.
Hi, good morning. It's Rebecca T. from Central California, Bakersfield. So grateful to be here. So I'm working on step six now. So I just moved through four and five, and it was difficult, and it was wonderful, and all of those things. And before I came into program, and before I did the step four, my only problem I truly thought I had was that I knew I was overeating, my food was out of control. And, of course, the side effects from that and all the physical ailments that followed with it were my problem. I truly, in my mind, I was a martyr. I thought, no, I gave everything to everyone else. I didn't take anything for myself. Always thought of others. Worked really hard, did my best, better than I needed to. And the food in my mind was, oh, well, that must have been, the food is the result of me, you know, giving so much of myself. And, you know, I need a treat somewhere, you know, I need a gift, and that was my gift. And then the poor me came in where, I don't have time for myself because, yeah, I'm giving to all of you. And, oh, I don't have time for myself because, well, you're a little bit more important, and that's okay. Interestingly enough, that kind of behavior, so working through the steps now and finally getting through four and five, that behavior caused me to, you know, I could be calm for quite some time, but then I'm going to explode. And I really, truly thought it was justifiable. You know, hey, I'm calm most of the time, so this one big blow up, you know, you should, you know, kind of deal with this sort of thing. You know, I think it pushed people away, and it gave me, you know, this kind of God complex, you know. And so now, through my recovery and this blessed inventory, I can see now all of these kind of things. I mean, yeah, there might be, you know, positive, you know, traits through all of these kind of things, but this type of opinion is breeding, you know, self-pity and victim and arrogance and judgment. And, you know, the list goes on, and all of that caused upset and anger, and I just couldn't be clear, and I couldn't be 100% happy, and I couldn't be 100% happy with you and or with me. So, thankful for this program, thankful for the clarity, and keep trudging on. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, Rebecca T. John K., followed by Liz T. John, you're on.
No, thank you, Mo. My name is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Thanks for your service, Mo, and Team Tuesday. Boy, I tell you, when I was new, writing a list of resentments was really easy because I had a lot of them. And I thought at first that this was about a way to bleed off the pressure to keep me sober, you know. I mean, it never dawned on me that this was a way to have me turn the glasses around and see how almost all of those resentments were actually unjustified, you know. Not all of them, but most of them. And, you know, my ego, the self-centeredness, of course, you know, that was the main driver of these resentments. Don't you know who I am? And yet you treated me this way? I mean, I was so terribly judgmental of everyone. You know, I compared them, you know, as human beings to this ideal of perfection. And, of course, none of us are perfect. But as I learned later, you know, it was mainly because I held myself to that same unrealistic benchmark, you know. The main thing that it took me years to understand was what those resentments were doing to me, you know. I think the first time I heard that saying about how resentments are taking poison and waiting for the other person to die, I was floored, you know, and it was absolutely right. You know, it was my stomach acid that was getting churned up, and, you know, often years after some trivial incident. And whenever I'd think of that I'd gnash my teeth, my blood pressure would rise, and these people were living rent-free in my head. And you know what? They weren't thinking about that incident. They weren't thinking about me. And chances are they were probably a lot happier than I was, mainly because I was walking around with thousands probably of resentments. You know, the other thing I realized later is the other thing about resentments is they made me feel superior. You know, if I was resentful about something, it's something I would never have done, you know, and I could feel superior. And today I really get, you know, some of those phrases that I was actually taught in another program. You know, how important is it? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? You know, today I don't want that negative energy taking up space in my head, and I don't need to feel superior to those people via those resentments. You know, and most importantly, I think, is I've lost so much of that judgmentalism towards myself and others, and, you know, directly as a result of working the steps. And I realize today I'm a human, and I'm going to make mistakes, and the same is true for others. You know, the vast majority of people don't want to do things that cause resentment. They don't mean to. You know, over in AA, you know, we end every meeting here in LA with the Lord's Prayer. And to me, that most important line in that thing is, forgive us our trespasses as we would forgive those who trespass against us. In other words, you know, I'm a human. I'm going to screw up on a daily basis. And if I want people to cut me some slack on my human foibles, I have to see, you know, that other people have those foibles too and cut them a little slack. You know, I mean, I just, you know, doing that first fourth step and looking at those resentments was so important. And to continue, I'm one of those people who believes in doing the steps over and over. And thank God, Nine. That list of resentments, I'll wrap up. It's a lot less, because I remember, you know, we're all just little kids walking around in these adult suits, and none of us got the manual for life. And when I think of it that way, it's a lot easier when people step on my toes, because I step on theirs. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, John K. Liz T., followed by Marilyn T.
Good morning. My name is Liz T. in Minnesota. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Liz. Thank you.
Hi, I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Minnesota, and I'm also really grateful for my gift of entire abstinence and the gift of being guided through the steps toward a spiritual awakening, toward neutrality, around the food and around my emotions. I'm looking at step four, resentment is the number one offender. I remember when I first read through the big book, I couldn't understand that. You know, it destroys so many alcoholics. I think somewhere else in the book it says, you know, to drink is to die. And how could I relate that to eating? To eat is to die. What do you mean? I'm eating for survival. You know, I'm living to eat rather than eating to live. And the more and more I went on with kind of trying to diet, you know, the diet mentality, trying to diet with group support, becoming abstinent and realizing that abstinence was my true problem, that I couldn't get comfortable in my own skin, trying to practice abstinence only with group support in the meetings, it became more clear to me that this is a life or death matter. It's a spiritual disease. You know, I can put down food and pick up any other type of compulsion. I can use my emotions as a weapon of self, trying to self-persevere, trying to cope, and then I end up, you know, stepping on more toes. People retaliate, and it's just that vicious cycle. It's like another vicious cycle. I put down the food, and I can get into other vicious cycles. So I'm grateful for this part of the book. It reminds me, when we were reading it, it reminds me of the on the bottom of 25, or if we are seriously compulsive overeaters, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. We were put in the position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. So for me, that's going back into the food or going back into my character defects and sitting there in the pity party. That was my old default behavior. I still go there sometimes, but I don't have to stay as long. That's the beauty. I have you guys I can call and do a 10th step and say, hey, I'm feeling sorry for myself, and I need to talk about this. And I see my selfishness, my dishonesty. I see my fears. Help me, you know, direct my attention to how I can be of use and get through this. I don't have to go back to the food anymore. So... but I can still binge on emotions like somebody else brought up. And so now that the food is down, it's my character defects become the work in progress for sure, for a lifetime. So with that, I will pass and appreciate everyone being here today and everybody's service. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz T. Marilyn T., followed by Melanie C.
Hi, this is Marilyn T., grateful recovering compulsive overeater in California. So I did just do my fifth and sixth and seventh step with my sponsor, and it started with doing step four. Well, it started at step one, but we are talking about step four now. You know, this was the most unusual step four I've ever done, because doing it out of the big book. I've never done it out of the big book. And on top of that, I did it while I was on vacation, started it and finished it after. And some things were revealed that's what I love about redoing a four step is you're never done. You know, you think you've cleared up the wreckage of your past, but you know, there is just so much wreckage, quite frankly, in a past for myself that as I turned 64 last week, you can never get it all out in one. So the blessing of the program is that you go back and you do it again. And then you live it for the rest of the steps and you find a way to help other people. Just the resentments always the number one offender. And it stems from a spiritual disease. And I think that for me, in looking back, has been that I have failed multiple times to expand my spiritual consciousness and to get it right with my higher power and to let things go. And that was the kind of interesting thing of being done with the fourth step, is thinking you are, and you do it, then you give it in the fifth. What's interesting is you take that hour of quiet time and more things are revealed. This was a very amazing thing. And as I was told, and I have experienced a new spiritual experience and a new freedom, being 200 pounds lighter in your head is more than a number on a scale. That will come as your higher power directs your healing. But the mind, being free in your mind to be able to absorb more of this program is everything. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Marilyn T. And we'll have Melanie C., and then we'll open up the floor for more shares. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning. Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. I was looking at this and remembering how it was for me and what I was understanding about the process here. I'm abstinent now. I've gone through 1, 2, and 3, and we're going to start now on the process of, I have this stuff in the past, you know, that's built up over all this time, and it's dogging me, and I have this idea that I'm clearly not to blame, and I had understood the process of my life, and I was okay to be doing what I was doing, and it was horrendous. I couldn't see that. And so the mindset that the big book shows me and how I'm going to take on this could be highly emotive proposition. I'm going to look at it just like a person would about store values. I can imagine that if I go to the grocery store, I don't care if this can of green beans is selling more than this can of green beans or what they have in process or in connection with each other. And I want to keep that mindset here because I have a very specific plan in mind here, what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to clear up the things that have dogged me before so I can start the process of opening up my mind to other possibilities. And when that's done, all those things that would make me shrink or cringe, you know, or hate, I was burned up a lot. I could tell you across the board when I came in here that I really didn't have any use for anybody anymore. They'd all done me wrong in some way, shape, or form. That was just a great, cute little package in which to do this thing. And so I had to start from that particular point, but I could not get into it anymore. I couldn't get into how come, why, and all that sort of thing. But I like the way that we keep it very succinct here. It helped me. Is it this can of green beans selling or not, Melanie? And it was the first time in my life that I was able to watch this process start to turn towards me, that I could see something about me, that I was not to be getting into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection about these kinds of things. I had left quite a wake in my past, but I didn't have to be dogged by it or brought down by it. What it is that I'm doing now that I'm sober and I'm looking at for the first time what disease could look like, I'm working out this relationship with my higher power already right here, right now. We talk about the spiritual malady in this true aspect of the healing part of this particular disease. I have heard lots of times folks saying that they could probably eat first before they, or eat while they're doing this kind of thing. And the spiritual malady is the religious aspect of this. And so I can then, after I have worked out this fourth step, then I can see for sure that I have, in fact, been able to stop eating. And that's not been my experience. I don't know why I jumped there. All of a sudden, I was looking at my time thinking I was running out and I had another piece to add to this. But most importantly, the point I want to make here is how helpful it was for me to, even during these very emotional times, these things that were coming up and how right I thought that I was, and I'll stop here with this, is that if I kept in mind that I was simply looking at whether this green beans were selling or not, I was getting an opportunity to have this thing turn so I could finally see me. I was no longer now painted with a large letter of V on my head anymore. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Mel.
Thank you. Thank you, Melanie C. Okay, I'll now open the lines up for more shares. Just to let me remind you that we are reading, we're on page 64, the first paragraph. Therefore, we started upon through three paragraphs ending with "We were burned up" on the top of page 65. The comments are on all three paragraphs. Who would like to share?
Lisa.
Gina R.
Lisa.
Reggio.
Gina. I heard Lisa. Gina.
Donna.
Reggio.
Lisa J.R.
Lisa J.R.
Reggio.
Yes.
Reggio. Lisa J.R. One more. So I have Lisa. I don't know if the first Lisa is the same as the Lisa J.R.
No, this is Lisa S.P.
S.P., okay. Gina, Donna, Lisa J.R., Reggio. And we can stop there if we have time. We'll go on. Two Lisas. Okay. So we start with Lisa S.P.
Yeah, thank
followed
you.
Followed by Gina. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks. I really like this where it says one object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. And for me, a lot of my damaged goods I'm very tied to, and I have to do a thorough four-step. I've done the Big Book process a couple of times, and each time it just digs more and more out. Even being abstinent for 10 years, I still have so much unsellable goods. It's amazing how at 58 I still have so much. And the whole thing about having a big wreckage in my wake, it, you know, God is very gentle. I remember in another program where we were saying, you know, you only shine kind of a candlelight at your character defects, because if God's showing a huge spotlight on my character defects, especially like the first time around I do the four step, it's going to be too much for me to see. So I think God is a gentle God, and I need to do it quickly, but I need to keep doing it and keep being truthful and honest. I was lying to myself. I was lying to others. I thought I was a basically very honest religious person. But doing the four step, this cleans my clock like nobody's business. And I just have to keep doing the 10th step. It talks about why we asked ourselves why we were angry. Anger was the only thing that was keeping me alive for so many years. I came from a really trauma-based childhood. But like what was said in other meetings is I made choices based on that trauma that caused me to be hurt. So in most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships were hurt or threatened. A lot of times it's things that I want. I want what I want when I want it. And these things are threatened. They are threatened. So why would I want to go through all this to give up everything? Give it all to God, not keep one iota of anything that is blocking me from Him. And so that's why I constantly, and I've heard in another meeting, you know, God shows up between that little bit of pen and paper, that quarter inch. That's where God comes out with the in my writing. I think it works a lot better to write out by hand than it does by the computer, because that's where God, the truth, just comes out, and it comes out, and it comes out each time I do it. So thanks, everybody, for being here. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.P. S.P. Gina, I didn't get your last initial, followed by Donna.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service. And hello, everybody on the phone line, and a special welcome to any newcomers or people who are checking us out for the first time. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, living in Green Valley, Arizona. What's really jumping out at me today is just how the preparatory work for this, at least for me, was an inventory of sorts. And it really relates around the context of entire abstinence and doing an inventory of the foods and my food behaviors that kept me stuck. And I guess I'm just seeing really clearly this morning how that was very necessary for me to just be super clear on what I was putting in my body that was keeping down all of this stuff that step four is designed to bring out. And so the brilliance of understanding, or the concept that they're giving us here, having that entire abstinence getting the stuff out of our system, getting the stuff out of our what we're putting in our food plan and putting in our bodies that is keeping us stuck is absolutely essential in order for this piece to work. It says, you know, if the owner of the business be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. Well, I had been fooling myself about all sorts of nutritional things for years. That really isn't the point that's being made, though, in this overall, the sense of the overall program. It's about weighing and measuring every aspect of my life. And if I hadn't gone through the process of being willing to learn how to weigh and measure, and I do that mostly at home. I don't do it when I'm out. But I know pretty much what I'm putting inside my body and how it affects me. And once I have that awareness, I'm awake to that, I'm alert to that, and I'm aware of it, then I can really be honest with what else is going to come up. And the other thing I like, and we'll talk about this, we don't have to do this perfectly. We just have to be thorough in whatever attempt we make. And then as we continue to work these steps, we have many additional future opportunities to continue to find those facts that may have been lurking there that we didn't catch the first time around. And that's what it means to live in 10, 11, and 12. And I count it the most amazing privilege to roll my sleeves up and do this with you guys every day, taking calls, receiving calls, just being there and doing this deal every day. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina R. Donna, followed by Lisa J.R.
Hi, this is Donna W. in Palo Alto, California. So grateful to be abstinent and recovered today, and I learned so much from you all. I've been in program 15 years, and I feel like I'm just really getting the spiritual malady that, you know, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, because my tendency still is to white knuckle and figure it all out myself. And I'm just starting to, the light is just coming on about, you know, I've been, you know, from that big book study, that all the, I abandoned myself, completely abandoned myself to God's care and protection. There's so much complete and utter. And so just really starting to wrap my head around this part of the recovery, of my recovery. And you know, I'm really grateful for the four step, how it is. It's just the facts. It's keep it simple. You know, I just look at you know, the how how I was affected with my self-esteem, my pocketbook, my ambitions, my personal relationships, including sex, where I was threatened. And it just keeps it so simple. It keeps it out of the storytelling and the drama. So I am grateful for that. I'm grateful to be one amongst many today. I'm grateful to know that there is a solution. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Donna W. Lisa J.R., followed by Reggie O. Lisa.
Good morning, Mo, and good morning, my fellows. I'm Lisa J.R., gratefully recovered by God's grace one day at a time. Love, and I've come to know that resentment is the number one offender. It doesn't say it's an offender. It says it's the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And I'm living proof. I saw that in my life when I crawled into this program, when I crawled into the Big Book study group, Vision for You. I was praying that God would take me home. Like Bill W., I didn't have the gut to do it, but I was feeling that way. My life had become so dark and dismal and ugly. And I had a faith walk, but this food thing was killing me. At least I thought it was a food thing. It wasn't a food thing. It was a heart thing. You know, my world was becoming black and dark and isolated and miserable. I hated myself, and therefore I found reason to hate everybody else, or at least something about everybody else. you know, one thing this fourth step did teach me in taking this thorough inventory and vigorously going about it, my disease wanted to hold on and give me fear around the fourth step. My disease, you know, knew that if I did a thorough fourth step, that I would be free of all these things. And I'd find a way to work future resentments, because I don't know about the rest of you, but my resentments traveled in packs. I could go through the day and have a little irritation with somebody. You know, of course they didn't follow my script. That would happen right away. But then the posse would come in behind the first little resentment. I would fall into superiority or exaggerating or minimalizing, and all these things would come in, revenge, character assassination, and then I would be, I would injure people in other ways. And then fear, then after my own behavior, then fear would set in that, and I'd be isolated all over again. So this was an ongoing cycle with me. And it, until I saw my fourth step, from a, you know, a picture of it, of what I was doing, was I then able to stop it, nip it in the bud when it happens, turn it over. No, you know, I would face spark people, you know, from time to time, get up in somebody's face, but more often than not, it was an internal heart thing. I was judgmental. I would character assassinate people inwardly all the time. And sometimes it would make me feel good, and sometimes I just thought I had the right to do it because, of course, they hurt me. But, yeah, I would tell anybody, do this like your hair is on fire, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Reggie O., you're on. Thank you.
Hey, good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service and everybody on the line. This is Reggie O., gratefully recovered in the Los Angeles area. And, you know, going into step four, when we were reading step three this last time, it really dawned on me something that really hadn't become that clear before, is that we've done three steps before we take on step four. And I say that, you know, because I've seen over the years, my years in program, I've seen a lot of people go out on step four and not complete it. And there's a lot, often a lot of fear going into it. I once did the Hyannis method, which seemed to take a lifetime, and I spent probably close to 6 to 8 months doing step four, and I was eating, and I don't know that I got clear of any of the resentments. I cried a lot, you know, when I was giving it away, but I don't know how freeing that was, because I was yet, I wasn't abstinent. And I, you know, but in step one, you know, we're told that we really need to, you know, we admit we're powerless over food. Our lives become unmanageable, and are asked in that step to put down the food before we continue. And there's a very good reason for that. That's why the steps are built on each other. And then there's, you know, we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. But in this third step, you know, we've done two when we get there, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, making sure we were at last ready to utterly abandon ourselves to Him, you know, are the words in the big book. And if I can remember that, you know, that I've chosen a path, you know, if I can remember that I've chosen a path, this power greater than myself is with me and can restore me to sanity, and I'm willing to turn my will and my life over to that power, I'm really going into the fourth step in a position that I've not been in life before, and that is with a power greater than myself, and that is with a guide who has gone through this and is recovered, has had the obsession removed, has had the spiritual experience, and who can probably relate to everything that comes up in my fourth step. That's always been true for me, you know, and I've done many, and the things that I feel most ashamed or most not wanting to say, the people I'm talking to, my guide has usually said, yeah, I've been there, done that, or told me some aspect of their lives that was very similar, or, you know, might even sound a little bit worse than mine. So it's a really amazing process, the purpose of which is to clear away the wreckage of our past and within our personality, so that we can develop a relationship with this power and gain that power as we do in step 11 to move forward in our lives. So was just good for me to see that this time, and of all the times, this is the first time I thought, wow, I'm going into this having made an enormous decision, and this is my first action that's evidence of that decision. And I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Reggie O. We have time for a 2-minute share if someone would like to take that.
This is Wendy B.
What's your name?
Wendy B.
Okay, Wendy, you're on. Thank you.
Okay, so the last sentence where it says we were burned up jumped out at me. And yesterday I was burned up. You know, I let something a fellow said to me, you know, offend me. And he wasn't following my script. You know, so I did a 10-step and God prompted me to read on page 92 in the AA 12 and 12. It says, finally, we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill as well as frequently wrong. And then we approach true tolerance and see what real love for our fellows actually means. It will become more and more evident as we go forward that it's pointless to become angry or to get hurt by people who, like us, are suffering from the pains of growing up. And that just shifted my heart and my mind, you know, then I recognized my humanity and my fellow's humanity, and, you know, I can just accept that, hey, we're all just trudging along, and that just helps so much. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, perfect. Thank you, Wendy B., and thank you all for your shares today. So let me see. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And we'll, who's it? Stephanie L., please read. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Hey, everyone. It's Stephanie L., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. And I apologize. There's a crying baby in the background. Hopefully you can't hear. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.